Today, we are joined by Paul Santilli. Paul is the CEO and board chair of the Strategic Consortium of Intelligence Professionals, or SCIP for short. SCIP is a global intelligence thought leadership nonprofit consortium that educates and advises on intelligence-driven strategy, innovation, digital transformation, and growth. Prior to SCIP, Paul worked for Hewlett-Packard Enterprise for 27 years, where he led the original equipment manufacturer, or OEM, business intelligence, strategy, and customer insights team. In that role, he focused on intelligence modeling and customer and industry insight to generate strategic initiatives that drove business growth. We will be discussing feedback and feedboard as it is linked to data, AI, and modeling, and the interface with decision-making and human insight. I am looking forward to learning more from Paul about competitive intelligence and what it means to activate it. So I'm going to get right into the meat of it.
Absolutely.
You work in such an interesting space, bringing together strategy and competitive intelligence. Could you help our audience to understand what competitive intelligence is and where they might actually already be using it in their work?
Sure. You know, competitive intelligence is a ideology that's been around for decades. I mean, it's been something that's traditionally, before the era of the internet, people would basically go off and do some investigative work using trade journals or contacts from libraries, newspapers, annual reports, things of this nature to understand the competitive nature of their business. So you would go off and obviously investigate other competitors and so forth. And it was a very lengthy and cumbersome process because it took a lot of time to collect the data and compile the data to generate some actions and insights that you would use them as part of a business strategy. Obviously, in today's world, that's something very different. Things move very quickly. We have the advent of the internet. Public content is readily available as well as paid content. So it's a different environment altogether. But competitive intelligence is a foundational platform, I like to say, that's really spawned a lot of other types of intelligence activities. And around that come human intelligence, social intelligence, economic intelligence, and so forth. And I think a lot of organizations are already utilizing a lot of things within their company that already do competitive intelligence. It might be maybe relegated to a small organization within the company, or it could be several individuals, or today's world is becoming a lot more formal. You have a lot more organizations that are head by intelligence leadership, chief data officers, chief intelligence officers, and things like that, which are really is indicative of bringing the concept and the importance of intelligence up into the leadership roles of the organization, which I think is critical to today's business success. So my experience over at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, as well as before that, I had a tenure at Apple Computer, has always been around the data generation content. And with that, data really being the driver of all intelligence by definition, it's essentially everything we do that generates data can be an intelligence source, and we can drive intelligence from that. So in this spectrum of intelligence, as we talk about it, it's extremely exciting for me and passionate for me because of the fact that utilizing this content can really make a difference if you utilize it correctly within your organization. So I'm super excited about, you know, evolving this data intelligence concept to many other different applications.
So you clearly have a lot of passion in this area. So why is this topic so important that you've made such a major shift in your career to drive this particular mindset in business and society?
Well, I look at more of an evolution in my career because I mentioned my tenure at Apple and before that at high-tech companies all my life through HPE. It's always been utilizing data to drive an outcome. And if you really look at the intelligence value chain, which you generate data, you analyze the data to create insights that generates intelligence, and you apply it for a business outcome. That's essentially the intelligence value chain summed up. That sort of process will yield a business outcome that's hopefully is positive and up and to the right for that organization. You know, it leads to something very, very good. Now, that sort of concept is always, I think, critical to a lot of organizations' success. And what I don't see happening in many organizations, not just in the enterprise space, but also in government applications and so forth, you don't see this this process being done. And a lot of things are done very haphazardly. Not all the data is vetted correctly, and the actions aren't implemented appropriately, and you get mixed results, and sometimes you get, you know, failures, or you get results that are positive, but you have a tremendous amount of cost and pain associated with getting to that outcome. And I think if we utilize data and intelligence appropriately, we can really make inroads and strides in not only organizational successes, but societal successes, and using intelligence to build and change organizations and people's perspectives, and understanding how intelligence can play a part in sustainability and social responsibility, a circular economy, energy improvements, habitat improvements, things of this nature, where you're actually using intelligence to make the world a better place. You know, we have a tagline at Skip that we call it, you know, Intelligence Consortium for the Betterment of People and Planet. And that's really the foundation of what I think intelligence can do on a global scale. So that's why I'm very passionate about this.
You introduced a new term there. I've never heard that one before. Intelligence value chain.
Yes.
Yeah, that's new for me.
Yeah. It may be new for other people too, but it's really around how you generate intelligence from data and how it's applied so that you get a positive business outcome. And then, you know, the components along that value chain, you know, you do double clicks within those components, and there's a lot of fleshing out of details and so forth. But that's really how data can be used to create this sort of positive outcome through the intelligence, you know, value chain.
So, I mean, I'm fascinated because I know a lot of organizations are going through some form of digital transformation, or, you know, sort of trying to catch up with the amount of change, particularly in the past year we've seen with generative AI being very widely utilized at the moment. So in your experience and what you're seeing in industry, what is your take on how organizations are aligning or not to this intelligence-driven strategy? Are they receptive? What are some trends you're observing?
So that's a great point, because I think historically it's been a difficult concept for organizations to embrace and to have that intelligence DNA permeated throughout the organization. That's been a real challenge. You know, leadership has to take the reins and drive that sort of intelligence thought leadership within the organization. And that's been a challenge. And I think what's happened over the last few years, especially coming out of COVID, there's many, many studies that I've used in many of my presentations around the how ill-prepared organizational leadership has been to adapting and even weathering and even growing during massive disruptive activities like COVID. And what's come out of that is that it really exposed a lot of organizations' susceptibility to being impacted by things of this nature, disruption, or as I call it, perpetual disruption, or high magnitude perpetual disruption activity like COVID. So what's come out of that, leadership has been seeing that, oh my gosh, we don't have a digital transformation strategy. We don't know how to use our data effectively. We don't know how to be digitally transformed, not only internally in the infrastructure of the organization, but more importantly, in the customer-facing elements of our business. And what's you can see study after study how organizations looked inwardly to try to enhance their IT capabilities to support and to become more digitally transformed. And virtually during the last, you know, during those 2 years, 3 years of COVID, had no investment in R&D and no investment in product development or anything of that nature, because they were trying to keep the ship, trying to plug all the holes in the ship, right, at that time. Those organizations that were digitally transformed not only had the plugs already in the ship, but they were building sales during that time of COVID and actually were improving their business and growing their business because they knew how to transform the organization and move forward. And you've seen the transformation, I think, in companies by having different, a lot more focus on data and intelligence. As I mentioned, there's chief intelligence officers, chief data officers, organizations. Positions that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago are now readily available and taking a serious role in the leadership of the company as a whole. So that, I think, in itself is a transformation between how organizations looked at the business environment and how they were prepared to confront issues and disruption versus how we look at it today with a much more data-centric focus in a lot of the strategies. So I see that as being a major transformation that's occurred over the last 5 to 10 years.
We kind of want to build on that. In what you've observed over the past few years with this big disruption Are there examples of where, you know, you might want to highlight that was a really good sort of intelligence move, or where, you know, things did not go so well? Are there some examples that might help people to understand what to look for?
I think instead of pointing out specific examples, I'd like to maybe share some common behaviors that I've seen in the intelligence environment. I've been many times asked about how do intelligence modeling get more ingrained in not only the organization as a whole, but as part of the leadership strategy. In other words, folks in the intelligence space are many times frustrated, and I've been in this space many times myself, on how do we drive intelligence into the leadership? How does the leadership take the intelligence function as a integral part of building the strategy? I always tell people in this business that your role needs to be viewed as a must have and not a nice to have, because you know what happens to roles that are nice to have. They you know, get dispersed very quickly during downturns and so forth. So you have to be a must have. How do you be a must have? Well, you have to be incredibly credible. I use that phrase quite often, incredibly credible in your content and information you provide. But you have to show this through small wins and actually beef up your credibility and your validation of being this integral part of the value chain within your company, and to promote the intelligence ecosystem and intelligence data value chain, as I mentioned, as being an integral part of the strategy. Now, it's one thing to have organizational leadership to embrace intelligence and hopefully have an intelligence function that's you know, directly, you know, attributable or directly reporting into a leadership, a CXO function. Okay, so that's one point. The other point, though, is really making sure your organization is nimble enough so that you're able to address changes in the intelligence landscape very quickly. So, you know, you'll see in history, definitely through the COVID crisis, organizations were very rigid in their ability. They did not adapt very well. A lot of these organizations fell by the wayside because they didn't have this digitally transformed platform or infrastructure, but were more rigid in their behaviors, infrastructure, and to their customer. Those are the ones that failed. The ones that were successful is that they had organizations that were very flat, decision-making was very quick, and they had the ability to they had flexibility in their manufacturing or services that they offered such that they can adapt to changing customer and economic conditions to address, you know, the needs that pertain at that time. So not only is the leadership capabilities that are important, but the organizational structure as a whole is critical to success.
I love that. You know, and again, just to go back, the season we're talking about the concepts of feedback and feed forward. And I think that there's so many ways to think about it. And I particularly wanted to interview you because I think when people think about feedback and feed forward, they think, you know, of sort of performance conversations or very formal feedback loops and feed forward loops. And what we're talking about here is this perpetual, you know, feeding back and feeding forward, because, you know, what we hear, we also need to then proactively shape our organization to be able to respond to. So I really like what you shared there.
Thank you. Yes, the constant feedback to feed it back into your data stream so that you can then act upon it. And, you know, that's absolutely critical. You can't just sit there and do an analysis that takes 3 months to do and then implement it and expect it to represent the world it is today, let alone what it was 3 months ago when you first started collecting the data. I mean, in today's environment, the world changes so many times, you can't do that. But your feedback comment is very important, because as part of this continuous development, this feedback becomes a, you know, part of your data set. And if you have the ability to utilize that loop and revisit that loop on a continuous basis, you are that much further ahead than your competition in being able to not only address issues happening today, but also using the ability to look at foresight and anticipation of content, looking at early warning indicators and what I call the golden nuggets that exist out of all the noise of data that's being collected. And of course, you can't do that, you know, this real-time effort to look at data and act upon it can't be done manually. You have to implement tools. And you mentioned about AI. And that is one of the tools that I've challenged many of the solution providers I spoke with around developing capabilities in the AI space to not only gather and process data on a real-time basis from the thousands of sources out there, but to use that data to anticipate and predict behaviors through many different scenarios on how the business outcomes might be realized, but then also then to apply a predictive and a prescriptive nature on top of that. So you're actually having the software not only tell you what may happen, but maybe what you should be doing about it based upon these different scenarios that you're painting. And that's a real challenge in the AI space. And, you know, today with OpenAI and the generative AI platforms that are out there, there's a lot of the upfront stuff that's being done, but it's really this back-end futures predictive and prescriptive element that I think is really the next platform, the next era around using AI in the intelligence space.
Mm. So I'd be very interesting sort of loops that we're unfolding here. I wanna sort of touch on that a bit because in the complexity and sense making space, we always make that key distinction, for example, between an algorithm driven intelligence, such as we're seeing in AI, and human intuition and human intelligence, and that the fact that there are some weak signals, and again, this concept of a hunch, right? That's a very human capability. And I'm interested in hearing your perspective on what you believe is where and how the differences come together. Where is the intersection between intelligence-driven decision-making and human intuition and judgment? Where do these two come together and how?
You know, that's a great question I get asked quite often these days is about, oh, AI is going to take my job or AI is going to replace me. And, you know, I'm going to be, you know, go on the wayside because I'm going to have a machine replace my thought leadership and so forth. But that's not true. I mean, at least in what I envision, there's a human element that they have not had a capability of AI being fluent in, and that's really that intuition element, that ability to see beyond the data itself and use a more of the human critical thinking understanding of how behaviors and how data is, or how outcomes are being done. And you know, you could paint every scenario you want, but there's always going to be that human perspective that can help interpret things that maybe the data doesn't suggest, but you would know this from critical thinking, you would know this from experience. You would know this from just human behaviors, which to this point, AI hasn't quite mastered yet. And, you know, there's conversations out there about, you know, different companies' AI capabilities and how it's becoming closer and closer to human thought and being self-observant and almost becoming a real thing, you know, this sort of thing. So I read these and I kind of take it with a grain of salt because there's different ways to measure it. It's not necessarily a universal platform on how you say things are self-aware, for example, but the bottom line is, without getting too theoretical out there, it's the human element is going to be a critical component always, I think, to interpreting and understanding how to use the outcome of this AI-generated outcome and how it's going to be applied in the different scenarios. So I think the human element is definitely an important point that needs to be part of this. And, you know, we could talk for hours on the human intelligence aspect of the intelligence landscape. And there's a lot there to unpack because you've got emotional intelligence and social intelligence and a lot of other things there that really pertain to behaviors, human behaviors, which gets into more of a psychological and socioeconomic type behaviors on a global scale. And you can really explore that and look at it in a much greater context. Again, I'm going off on a slight tangent here, unfortunately, but because I tend to do that in the world of intelligence. But to get to your point, the human element is absolutely critical. And I think we'll always be there.
So, I mean, you touched on this a little bit earlier. You said it's sort of strategic intelligence for the betterment of people and planet, right? And I think that it goes beyond sort of just numbers and helping to grow businesses. It really has a more encompassing element to it. Could you help me to understand what constitutes the full breadth of what intelligence ecosystems look like, taste like, feel like?
Yeah. Great question. I love talking about this because this is what the SKIP organization, the organization that I represent, is really charting out to do, building on a foundational platform that is super critical and will always be the backbone of what Skip is all about, is that competitive intelligence element and the tools and technologies and methodologies and processes all associated with competitive intelligence. But if you really open up the intelligence envelope, you get what I call the intelligence ecosystem, which really pertains to all of the things related to intelligence as a whole. Like I've been talking about human intelligence and emotional intelligence and financial intelligence and so forth and so on, that are much broader in scale and in scope than a traditional competitive intelligence focus area. So I use the analogy of, you know, data. In today's world, we are smothered in data, right? Big data, IoT, it's everywhere. Everything we do is data-driven, data collection, and so forth. Data drives intelligence by definition. You need data to drive insights that drives intelligence per this intelligence value chain I mentioned earlier. Given that type of a definition, intelligence is therefore, by association, essentially pervasive and everywhere. So your intelligence landscape now has just been magnified a million times, where that intelligence is essentially wherever there's data. Therefore, this intelligence ecosystem makes up all of the content and all of the data and intelligence within the entire breadth of everyone's behaviors and organizations and interfaces and stuff like that. So the intelligence ecosystem is much broader. You have many more different applications. The comment that you mentioned about the tagline we have, Intelligence Consortium for the Betterment of People and Planet, truly an important point of the Skip value proposition, but it really means that using intelligence in many different application areas, but also using it towards sustainability and social responsibility, using it toward improving behavior, empowerment, natural habitat restoration and improvements, and so forth and so on. Intelligence really being utilized across the spectrum of applications wherever there's data generated. And that's what I really mean by this intelligence ecosystem.
Is there, you know, like a couple of stories that come to mind when you think, yeah, that was, you know, intelligence done really well and that helped to impact on societal direction, that really helped us to understand human behavior toward things like sustainability, for example? Are there examples that immediately pop to mind for you?
Well, there's many out there. I'm sure people can really realize that from an individual company standpoint. But I mean, if you look at it globally, I mean, just even where technological roadmaps are heading, you know, the intelligence around where how human behavior has evolved, and intelligence around how certain things are done and how you know, people communicate, the whole social media, the onset of social media platform. I mean, the amount of content around that and data that's used, intelligence that's used to generate that sort of direction are classic examples. I mean, you can look at the evolution of our technological prowess over time. You know, the advent of our technology in automobiles and human mobility, and the advent of space exploration. And these are global concepts that have really benefited from, you know, huge explosions of intelligence. Look at what happened in the 50s and 60s with the advent of the introduction of the integrated circuit and the generation of semiconductor. I had part of my experience in the semiconductor fabrication space, and it's truly astounding the level of content that people don't realize it's intelligence applications, but it really is. You're utilizing an intelligence mindset and a thought process that drives these new technological innovations, you know. So all around us, happening all the time. What I'm trying to do is to utilize our Skip platform to bring awareness to the formality or the process focused perspective on using intelligence to drive this betterment of people planet. Because right now, organizations aren't structured appropriately around the value of data and how to use intelligence. And the Skip organization, we're you know, globalizing our value prop. We're still the world leading intelligence repository for all things intelligence related, with tools and trainings and education and you know, curriculum assets that all provide intelligence content to help organizations become more intelligence centric and more fluent in the intelligence and utilization of data. So this is what, you know, our charter has been for Skip, and what I'm really amplifying now on a global scale on the new Skip value prop.
So there is so much out there. As you've mentioned, we're smothered in data and there's so many tools and there's so many sort of competing conversations and people trying to pull attention here and there. For people who are listening to this podcast, for whom, you know, intelligence is an aspiration, but they're not quite sure how to use it. What are some ways, you know, that those organizations could start to become more purposeful and intentional in developing their own capabilities? What are some of the feedback and feed forward loops that exist, you know, in naturally in organizations that they might be able to tap into?
So I've had the privilege of speaking at several universities and to classes, not only for people who are just freshmen entering into the intelligence space and all the way up to graduate students doing research on various intelligence projects. And my message to all of that population, including business leaders and academic scholars that I've spoken with many, many times, it's all, you know, to me, this is a very exciting time because we have a tremendous amount of data to make decisions around using intelligence. We have a business mindset that data is becoming more and more critical. The data is now a commodity. It's almost a currency in some ways. And we have where there's a confluence of forces here coming to a point by which people are really starting to realize that the utilization of data to drive intelligence is becoming more and more a critical and a must-have behavior in organizations. And that's super exciting because, as I mentioned earlier in this discussion, that's been a challenge in the past. So when I tell these freshmen and seniors and graduate students in universities that, wow, they are at the cusp of entering into something very exciting, very impactful, they can make a difference in many organizations and as well as on a global scale by embracing and driving this intelligence mindset into all of the functions that they have in their lifestyle. So we're at a great, you know, the planets are aligned, so to speak, with a lot of the mindsets, the data that's there. COVID taught us a lot, so we have some experience from that. And I think the opportunities going forward are just incredibly ripe and incredibly valuable for us to embrace and move forward on. So I'm excited, as you could probably tell.
Yes, absolutely. What are some ways to skip as an organization, right, is developing its own thinking and learning around this space?
So, you know, I've taken the role of leading Skip up here because I'm passionate about what, not only about the intelligence field as a whole, but I feel that Skip is best suited to really drive this expanded intelligence mindset through the intelligence ecosystem. I think they're the best organization out there globally to lead this effort. And as I mentioned before, Skip's foundation has been built on competitive intelligence, and that is going to remain forever a foundational pillar of our structure. But we're going to build off of that, and we're doing that already today by introducing a lot of different perspectives in our training, in our speakers, in our ideology, in our events that we're having. Next month, we have a major event in Europe, in Prague. People who are listening, if you haven't signed up, definitely want to go to this event. It's part of our IntelliCon event series. We have webinars and workshops centered on other things in the intelligence ecosystem. But moreover, we're going global with more and more intelligence environments that are local, that are valuable to the local areas of the world. And what I mean by that is we're establishing these local and what I call intelligence centers of excellence that'll be situated in various parts of the world that'll look at the intelligence needs in that location, because the fit in India is not going to be the same as fit in North America, which is not going to be the same fit in UK, for example. They're going to be different intelligence perspectives and application areas and so forth. So by having these regional centers of excellence in the intelligence space, I think will help us globalize the Skip value prop, as well as us being able to impact and have a positive influence on all different types of application areas on a global scale. So that's very exciting to me. We're establishing more and more what I call affiliates, and these are partnerships with other intelligence organizations. We are establishing, upwards of almost a dozen of these over the last 6 to 8 months. Around the globe. And these are intelligence organizations situated in many different regions of the globe that are part of the consortium that we're building. We're including academic institutions into the consortium. We have a number of different other application areas into the consortium. So the consortium building is a key component of how SCIP needs to grow in order to be this impactful, valuable component in the intelligence ecosystem on a global scale. So this is really what the consortium idea is all about.
So I'm just going to paint a scenario, right? So if, for example, I was, a manager in an organization for whom the word intelligence is still, you know, somewhat of a, it's a little intimidating. I know that I need it. I really want to build this for my team, for my department. I don't quite know where to start. What are some practical tips you can give someone like that, that in that type of scenario?
Well, of course, I'm going to say first they need to join SCIP. I got to make a plug, right? First, they need to join SCIP. Well, certainly, you know, aside from that, reaching out to other individuals or gaining some advisement in how to utilize intelligence within your organization, start small. It's the small wins that build up the validity and credibility of the need around intelligence. You know, but the, you know, you drive it at the, you know, it's the crawl, walk, run sort of scenario. You drive it in the individual or small group context, and you make it a positive influences so that you grow it now to an organization. You make positive influences. And now you grow it now to the company. It becomes part of the company's DNA. So an individual starting off, you have to, you know, understand what it's about. You know, again, advisement. SCIP is a great source. Of course, I've got to, you know, say that, but I truly believe that. I've changed my career into SCIP because I truly believe that SCIP has that sort of skill set and knowledge and reputation around it. But, you know, you'd start small and grow the credibility into something much larger where it becomes, as I say, a must-have rather than a nice-to-have. And you become influential in the strategy development and the decision-making of the company. And you can really show valuable benefits, valuable return on investments, the whole metrics side of things and understanding, you know, you talked about the feedback loop. The metrics are a critical element that could be another whole hour conversation at least, just on understanding the metrics associated with development of intelligence systems and companies. So you really need to measure the effectiveness and the ROI and to understand what worked previously, what didn't work. Maybe you need to incorporate new tools and things of that nature. So you know, long answer to a short question, but it's really to start small and to grow upon the successes to make it part of the company's infrastructure.
So, I mean, but would you recommend, for example, that they connect with people who understand what type of data is being collected, connect with different ways to analyze and make sense of the data? Like if I knew nothing about intelligence, what would you recommend?
Yeah, definitely. Reach out to other people or do the research yourself. Reach out, you know, LinkedIn's a great source I use all the time for business contacts and understand who's doing what where. But reach out and understand, get the learnings in terms of what intelligence can do for you. What is intelligence? How do we use data to drive decision making? There's classes not only SCIP offers in that, workshops that we offer, but, you know, reach out to individuals or read papers and read research content around the development of intelligence. Understand who the sources of those contents are, because in my opinion, obviously some sources are more relevant to today's world than what it used to be 20, 30 years ago. So there's some vetting that you might need to do, but it's really taking the initiative to go off and, learn about this stuff. I mean, you know, I didn't sit in a classroom and somebody told me, you know, how to spell intelligence. I mean, you basically are using it through necessity and through behaviors and understanding what data means. And that's prompted me to put pen to paper and, you know, write some content about my perspectives and my experience and my use cases. And hopefully those become reference documents for people like who you're describing, a new manager that's trying to understand what intelligence is all about. So there's a lot of research content out there. And, I would recommend that to get educated and knowledgeable about how intelligence can really make a difference. And you can be a change agent within your company and even outside of your company. It's, as I mentioned, it's truly an exciting time for to be an intelligence professional.
Mm. So you mentioned change, which is a very interesting topic, because I believe that everyone is navigating some kind of change or other. In my conversations with friends and experiences with clients, I don't know of a single organization, regardless of industry or geography, who isn't undergoing some kind of change transformation. So I suspect it's a sign of the times. And there's some kind of genuine systems level change going on.
Now, without a doubt.
Yeah. From an intelligence perspective, what are some things you might recommend organizations watch and observe as they navigate this big transformation?
So I love this concept about change. I mean, everyone talks about it forever. And, you know, everyone says we need change. And then when people say, who's going to change? And nobody raises their hand, right? Everybody wants someone else to change. but, you know, I loved reading these articles by industry leaders about the new norm, or if, you know, when we get past COVID and we're going to return to normalcy. I mean, what in the heck is that? Right. So to me, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as normalcy. Normalcy is change. Normalcy is doing things differently and constantly being a change agent. You know, there's an expression and a perspective that I think people always want to, that you need to keep in mind is that you either become the disruptor or you become disrupted. I mean, there's dozens of examples in the industry about how that's been the case. And you have the industry leaders today who are the disruptors. And they're the ones that are changing and being the change agents for whatever they're doing. So that ability of change is inherent in their organization. Now, you need to have an organization that's flexible and adaptive and nimble enough to make those changes and still be productive and still be accountable and still be satisfying customer needs. So this area of how to be a change agent, that needs to be embedded in the DNA of not only the mindsets of people, but the mindsets of organizations. And, you know, that's where I think the intelligence and utilization of tools and all these things I've talked about plays a part in knowing how to utilize data and be that change agent and that disruptor for what it is that you do.
You mentioned, for example, data. You know, what are some trends that you're observing? Are people using public source data? Are people looking to create new data? And where is the real need from a data perspective?
So open source data, of course, OSINT data, public domain content, there's paid content. There's all kind of other data that's in many different types of formats, you know, pictorial, video, so forth and so on, structured, unstructured, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the data pool is more complex and larger than ever before. And it becomes larger and larger, right? Tools like AI help you decipher through that data. But, you know, one of the points I want to talk about with regards to data and sourcing of content is really, you know, the aspect of the right data versus the wrong data. Now we're coming into an era, age with, deep fakes. And, you know, dark web and all these kinds of things where you have AI-based platforms that are changing the data, or you can have companies putting out fake data to anticipate or to promote behavior from the competitor that's not true, that they're acting on data that isn't true, false flag, as they would call it. So the whole truthfulness of data, you know, fake news and the onset of the perspective, the narratives and, you know, how things are perceived. This is a critical element in the intelligence business. And I speak on this term on this quite often because the ability to decipher, you know, what is actually factual and truthful is all based upon who's saying it and what narrative they have around it. And the fundamental foundation, you know, to get to the final chapter of the book, so to speak, you know, truth and fact is really based upon that perspective that society embraces as a whole. And whether it's right or wrong or factual based upon someone else's criteria, it's essentially, you know, behaviors of organizations, behaviors of society is based upon that perspective that most of society deems as being, you know, factual. So given that, you could have the best data, the most truthful data you can, and you act upon this truthful data, but it may not be the right decision because society is operating completely to a different drumbeat. And that is something that where the human intelligence comes into play, where you really need to decipher, you know, the falseness versus the truthfulness and what matters to your organization, how it applies it to the overall environment. And that's really more the art of the game here rather than the science. So, you know, when you talk about change and data, there's many components in this whole aspect around data truthfulness and the data factualness that spurs a decision making within your company is something that needs to be looked at more and more as society moves on, and more as deep fakes become more evolved.
I really like that you brought that up. It's almost like there is the data, then there are the insights and the narratives that get created around it, particularly with sort of AI that is consistently learning. So it actually learns and imbues all of those false narratives and biases as well. So how do we actually tell that apart? And I do agree, you know, that's really the human ability, the judgment to make those calls, right?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the guidelines I give in my discussions with folks is around, you know, don't ever base a business decision on one data point. You know, it's, you've got to triangulate, you've got to get multiple sources, consider the multiple sources, because in today's world, that one data point can be a false flag, can be a false data point. So you really need to garner, and that takes time and there's risk associated with that and so forth, but you need to be able to have substantiated the direction multiple ways, bottoms up, tops down, left, right, however perspective you're going to give. Previous role I had was one by which I would need to identify macro trends and size of markets and things of this nature. And we would constantly test our theories and algorithms in different formats, different calculations and different means by which we would do that, just to make sure we were plus or minus 5-10%, you know, within the range of acceptability. And that's something I think is critical as people develop modeling in the intelligence space, is to make sure you test your own model, maybe externally and internally through multiple different directions, to hopefully weed out some of that uncertainty and get your data a little bit better suited for your needs. You know, there's when you generate data, it's never going to be 100% boy, this is it. All indicators indicate 100% move in this direction. No, there's never that. Human intelligence is going to give you that ability. Human intuition will give you that ability to say, you know what, we're 60, 70, 80 percentile. We need to make some business decisions on this. And that's how the data intelligence world always works. Very rarely, if ever, it's a 100% needle all the way to the right sort of thing. It's always going to be somewhere in the middle where you got to make some decisions off of. And, you know, utilizing these various different levels give you that statistical probability. Now you can bring in statistics into all this and, you know, give you an indication as to whether or not this data is relevant enough to make a decision off of. So there's a whole nother element there that's part of this truthfulness and aspect.
With everything that we've talked about and everything that you're observing in your space, if you could direct people's attention to something important in the world, what would it be?
Direct people's attention to something important in the world. Gosh, it's our ability to make a change, to improve individual one person's ability and build off of that one person's success and change the environment around you. The aspect of using data and intelligence. I mean, I don't want to get formal about that, but if you can utilize a mindset that helps individuals improve healthcare, help a person, a homeless person, or, you know, I mean, simple stuff, just being more tolerant and understanding and helpful and without getting too philosophical and, you know, on this discussion, but it's really, you know, making a change and having it step forward. And, you know, one of the aspects of the SKIP value prop is around the sustainability and social responsibility element. It's a core competency, and it's something that I strongly believe in, and I want to partner with organizations and move the dial so that we can use our learnings in this intelligence space and help organizations and help people in this other space. So that's what I'm hoping to be able to do for with this forum. But that's a great question. I think we should all ask ourselves that question every day, to be honest with you.
Hey, I agree. I couldn't agree more. That's wonderful. So what we do on the Salience Point is usually wrap up with a summary of the three main takeaways. Now, there are many, many wonderful takeaways from this. I'm going to try my best to take sum up it, the three that really stood out to me. The first one is that the use of data-driven intelligence is really critical for any organization's success.
Absolutely. Yes.
And that the world is your oyster right now when it comes to
the
data.
Yeah, the intelligence ecosystem. Yeah. It's an expansion. It's everything is intelligence related. Great, great first point. I'm anxious to hear your other two points.
Right. So yes, that was one of my first takeaways. So you really need to start if you haven't got it, or you probably have it and you just need to figure out how you're you're, you know, using it and how you can enhance that. So that was my first point. The second one is that it is the responsibility almost of everybody, but that leadership really needs to drive this up and down the business and also then enable people to actually make sense and to take action on this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Leadership is the organization is what's going to really take it to the implementation level, which is critical. Great, great second point. Okay. So far you're two for two. Let's see the third one.
So my third one was really what we just covered, just a little while ago. It's around this concept of data, right? And it's not about sort of, trying to be 100% truthful or accurate because we're never going to get there. But it's recognizing when to actually, call it, make a decision. When it is that you actually apply your human ability to make sense, to intuit things, and also to frame and reframe, because that's what you said, right? We're always having to test our own sort of models. We need to look at it in three or four different ways. We need to triangulate. Yeah. And that's really going to be the crux, where as intelligence professionals or people utilizing intelligence, that's almost like the test of how far you can take that.
Yep. Excellent. Yeah. Great summation. I'm pleased. You must have got that from the notes before the call rather than what I just said, because there's no way I could even come up with the top three like you did. No, that's a great summation, Zen. I would add a fourth, and the fourth one would be, hey, to join Skip, skip.org.
Yes,
gotta make
please.
A plug for the organization. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've been around a long time and we're doing a lot of things, but, you know, when I talk about the knowledge base, you know, Skip is definitely filled with intelligence, thought leadership in that space. And, you know, there's different ways to join. You can even join for free. So there's different ways to do that to get some inclusion in the Skip consortium, as I like to call it. So, but yeah, that's a great summary, Zen. Great summary. You know, data is our friend and we need to embrace it and be the disruptor and be the change agent for the betterment of people and planet.